Austin, Texas. It's David Knight.
Welcome to The Real News on this Tuesday, August 22nd, 2017. I'm David Knight, your host. Let's begin with some news. We've had more than 30 people injured in a Pennsylvania train crash. At least four people are reported to be in critical condition. It plowed into an empty train sitting at a transportation center in Upper Darby. We also have an increase in the number of people who have signed a White House petition to recognize Antifa as a terrorist organization. That's now up to 200,000 people. That is a 30% increase in just 24 hours. It was 150,000 yesterday. We also have a op-ed piece written by a self-described core founder, a core organizer and co-founder of Black Lives Matter in Louisville, saying that white people, here are 10 requests that we have from Black Lives Matter. He says, if you don't have any descendants, will your property to a black or brown family, preferably one that lives in generational poverty? White people who can afford to downsize are urged to give up the home that you own to a black or brown family. Well, we don't have to actually do that. I think this is going to be we're going to be giving up the American dream in order to educate foreign citizens who come here to be educated. We call them dreamers. So the dreamers who come here to be educated, those are going to be higher property taxes. We're having explosive property tax increases here in the Texas area. You probably are where you are as well. It's not because we have the American population exploding. It's because we have an explosion of people who are coming in here, and their governments and their country do not want to educate them. So we become the relief valve for that. Also today, we have the reporter who exposed BBC pedophilia cover-up suddenly dies at 52. As Free Thought Project reports, courageous investigative journalist and ex-BBC news correspondent Liz McCain, 52, who exposed the infamous pedophile Jimmy Savile and ultimately resigned in 2013 because the BBC refused to air her investigation into Savile, has died after suffering a stroke. And of course, this was something that was an open secret in the corridors of power at the BBC, at Scotland Yard. There had been multiple investigations into Jimmy Savile's massive pedophile rings and his connections to those who were in power. And as people lower down would begin the investigation, it would be shut down by those higher up, just as her documentary was shut down by those at the BBC. Meanwhile, we have Jay Johnson saying the removal of Confederate statues is a matter of homeland security. I guess we didn't have any security for these last 150 years as we had statues around. Now it's essential that Homeland Security, the creation of the Patriot Act, has to now remove the foundations of our history, of our culture, as they've already removed of the Patriot Act, the foundations of our Bill of Rights and the Constitution. One bit of good news, we're going to talk about Trump's reversal on Afghanistan, but some bit of good news is that Trump has disbanded a federal advisory panel on climate change. I think it's important to remember that the one individual that we have left that we can identify as being on board with the Trump agenda is EPA's Scott Pruitt. And he has done a great job in terms of sticking to the agenda of Donald Trump. But on these other issues, as we see individuals leave, the day that Steve Bannon was forced out by McMaster, on that very day, the generals marched Donald Trump to Camp David and told him about face. And that's exactly what we saw last night. We're going to have the reactions to that. We're also going to take a look at the high seas hacking that happens, that's been happening to now two destroyers and two cruisers in just this year. And it's not only the military, it's also commercial shipping. There's something going on with GPS spoofing. And this is not just shutting it down, it's making it appear that they're in a different location. We'll have the details on that when we come back, and we'll take a look at Afghanistan. Stay with us.
real news. Live from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
North Korea, his most aggressive warning to date.
President Trump is not a racist.
I say red baseball caps mean you're an asshole.
Tonight, the fight over Confederate statues is now a flashpoint.
Large groups of people punching, kicking, and hitting each other with sticks.
If you see this and you understand what is going on and it makes you angry, do not take yourself out of the game. Real news, it is August the 22nd, 2017. Yesterday, as news came to us of yet another naval ship having a collision with a commercial shipping vessel, it began to look suspicious that there was a pattern developing. And we talked about this yesterday, Alex Jones and I did, on the fourth hour of Alex's radio show. I want to go into this in a little bit more detail, because as we saw this McClatchy article talking about how the Pentagon will not say how the USS John McCain was rammed by an oil tanker near Singapore, they say red flags are flying as the Navy's decades-old reliance on electronic guidance systems increasingly looks like another target of cyber attack. And I think this is very important because this is a front line of defense. As we mentioned yesterday, we have a large percentage of the Pacific Fleet now, as this escalating tension with North Korea is happening, a large percentage of that has now been shut down so they can investigate what happened. Now, what has happened with this? In the last year, we've had four incidents. Two of these have been cruisers. They were of the Ticonderoga class. Two of these, the most recent two, have been destroyers. They are part of the Arleigh Burke class. All of these ships have the Aegis system on board. That's the electronic fire control, but it also has a very complicated navigation in it. Now, the very first cruiser that was hit with a fishing vessel. And that was the second one that was hit. The first one had an issue running aground. The second one collided with a fishing vessel. That fishing vessel had no GPS or even a radio. So when we look at that, there's a lot of questions. When the first destroyer was hit, people said, well, was this a terror attack by the destroyer, by the commercial vessel. Did they go after that destroyer, or did somebody hack its GPS system? But in the first two incidents that involved cruisers, there was no ship that had a GPS. One, as I point out, was running aground, and the other one was a fishing vessel with no GPS or radio. The first one that happened on January the 31st was the guided missile cruiser, the USS Antietam. It ran aground off the coast of Japan. On May 9th, another cruiser, the USS Lake Champlain, was struck by a South Korean fishing vessel. In the wee hours of June the 17th, a destroyer, the USS Fitzgerald, and these are $1.5 to $2 billion vessels, as McClatchy points out, they're bristling with electronics. It collided with a container ship that resulted in the death of seven sailors. And there have been consequences now for the people who are the commanding officers. They've been relieved of duty. Looks like they'll be facing a court-martial. But the question is it their problem, or is it a hack on the high seas? Now, one individual who is a professor at the University of Texas, his name is Todd Humphreys. He's an expert in satellite navigation. He says, statistically, this looks very suspicious, doesn't it? And these irregularities are not just affecting military vessels. They are also affecting the shipping industry. They had an incident back in June the 22nd. Somebody manipulated GPS signals in the eastern part of the Black Sea, and it caused 20 commercial ships to think that they were inland about 20 miles near an airport. Do you understand? This is not shutting down their GPS navigational systems. It is giving them false information, showing that they're not even in the water, that they're 20 miles inland near an airport. They said that was the first known instance of GPS spoofing. And again, that is not shutting it down. That is telling it that you're somewhere else. And then we had, after that, this incident that we have in just the last couple of days. I think it's very interesting when we look at the fact that the Aegis system is capable of tracking simultaneously 100 targets. It is a very sophisticated system. It's not just radar. It has a lot of different aspects to it. And it is something that's been around for quite some time, but they have been upgrading the system. It first appeared in the mid-80s, and they have been doing upgrades to these classes of ships ever since. And as a matter of fact, it is not something that is even an old technology. They're still going to be putting in an additional 3 new destroyers with the Aegis weapon system next year, fiscal year 2018. So right now there's 84 Navy ships with this Aegis weapon system, 22 cruisers, 62 destroyers. I want to talk about what happened with the Fitzgerald people, because that was back, as I said, 2 months ago. The leaders have now been punished. The crew was praised for survival after this collision with the cargo ship. And I want to read to you what actually happened in this ship. This is something that happened very quickly as it collided with this commercial shipping vessel. They say the damage spanned 2 decks. Water poured into the ship, particularly into the berthing area where the sailors sleep and live, and they had 42 beds as well as a lounge. They said by the time one sailor jumped from his top bunk, the water was chest high. The last sailor to be pulled from berthing to number 2 was in the bathroom at the time of the collision. The flood of water knocked him to the deck floor. Lockers were floated past him. He scrambled across them towards the main berthing area. At one point, he was pinned between lockers and the ceiling of berthing 2, but he was able to reach for a pipe in the ceiling, pull himself free. He made his way to the only light he could see, which was coming to the port side watertight scuttle. So he went through this little 2-foot area thing that was seal off the different areas. He was swimming toward the watertight scuttle when he was pulled from the water, red-faced with bloodshot eyes. He reported that when taking his final breath before being saved, he was already submerged and breathing in water. To get him out into that next area, because he was about to drown, that meant that it flooded the compartment above it. They could not get that hatch closed in time. It was taking on water so rapidly. And in that area, that is where the 7 sailors died. So a great tragedy. And yet, when we look at this pattern that is happening with these Aegis systems, and it looks as though they have been hacked or the GPS systems have been hacked, somebody is able to spoof this for commercial vessels. And again, when you look at these two they're the destroyers, the last two that have been done in the last couple of months, you could say, well, maybe somebody is hacking the GPS system of these commercial vessels and causing the collision. And yet we had earlier in the year some cruisers that did not have a collision with ships that were commercial ships running under GPS. As I point out, one ran aground, another one hit a fishing vessel with not even a radio, let alone a GPS. Furthermore, we've had another destroyer, the USS Donald Cook, that has had 2 encounters with the Russians. This was back in 2014 and again in 2016. In April of 2014, the Cook was deployed to the Black Sea. This happened right after the vote to separate Crimea from the Ukraine and rejoin Russia. So they were close to the Crimean Peninsula. And if you recall, they had a situation where, and it was not widely reported at the time, the second incident was widely reported last year. But at that time, they had a Russian ship, a Russian plane, that flew over the ship for quite some time. And what the Pentagon said, the State Department rather, said that it gravely demoralized the Cook's crew. Now, this was an unarmed plane, so there wasn't, they could determine that it had no missiles, so nothing was fired at it. And yet, there were reports that the unarmed Su-24 fighter jet from Russia, carrying only electronic gear, was able to shut down their electronic systems and completely hack the system. Now, that was denied by the Pentagon, it was denied by the administration, and yet it happened twice, a couple of years apart. The second time it happened, in April of 2016, almost 2 years later to the date, the USS Donald Cook was buzzed by another Su-24 while on patrol in the Baltic Sea, only 50 miles from the headquarters of the Russian Baltic Sea Fleet. So, Secretary of State John Kerry said that under the rules of engagement, they could have shut it down. They didn't. Nevertheless, it appears that the Russians have the ability to not only shut down the Aegis system, but to also hack GPS, perhaps, for commercial ships. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We'll talk about Afghanistan.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
I'm David Knight, and we're going to take a look at President Trump's new policy on Afghanistan. It is a complete reversal, as the headline from Daily Mail points out. Trump's U-turn on Afghanistan. The president admits he was wrong. But was he wrong when he opposed increasing the number of troops there, opposed staying there, when he was doing that 5-6 years ago? We're going to take a look at what he said 5 or 6 years ago. We're going to look at what he had to say during the campaign, and we're going to look at what he announced. The American conservative put it this way: how the brass talked another president into a losing strategy. Despite the tough talk, Trump's approach on Afghanistan is no different than 2009. And they start out with a quote from Douglas MacArthur. He said, "Never fight a land war in Asia." As a matter of fact, just 2 months before the election, a headline in the Military Times said, "After 15 years of war, America's military has about had it with nation building." Now, he's saying this is not going to be nation building. But after addressing the American people on Monday, the American conservative points out his new strategy in Southeast Asia, a purposeful trope. And we're going to take a look at how his speech lifted verbatim things that Obama told us about Afghanistan. They keep using the same phrases, the same tropes. He used the same trope to signal his intention to shape a broader regional policy. Trump appears to have embraced the military's anti-nation building sentiments while adopting a policy of winning, though without saying exactly how that would happen or even defining what a win is. We do know what a win looks like when we're talking about our economy. Do we know what a win looks like in Afghanistan? What is the objective? We haven't seen that mentioned, have we? They said they wanted to get the Taliban out of power, and yet the Taliban controls about half of that country after 16 years of war. So what does a win look like? As a matter of fact, we'll talk about later what Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is saying. He's saying, well, we need to get the Taliban to the table so we can get them as part of a legitimate government. So it's very confusing what the goals are here. And they don't have to tell us exactly how they're going to do it. That's part of the tactic. So we don't need to know what the tactic is, but we do need to know what the goal is, how you define winning, and what the strategy is in broad terms of how to get there. And we need to have a declaration of war, which we still don't have. And so they conclude by saying, in fact, though we'd almost certainly deny it, what Trump proposed is a reprise of what Barack Obama did in January of 2009. So let's play some clips from President Trump's speech last night where he laid out his proposal. Here's that clip.
As a result of our comprehensive review, American strategy in Afghanistan and South Asia will change dramatically in the following ways. A core pillar of our new strategy is a shift from a time-based approach to one based on conditions. I've said it many times, how counterproductive it is for the United States to announce in advance the dates we intend to begin or end military options. We will not talk about numbers of troops or our plans for further military activities. Conditions on the ground, not arbitrary timetables, will guide our strategy from now on. Another fundamental pillar of our new strategy is the integration of all instruments of American power, diplomatic, economic, and military, toward a successful outcome. The next pillar of our new strategy is to change the approach and how to deal with Pakistan. We can no longer be silent about Pakistan's safe havens for terrorist organizations, the Taliban, and other groups that pose a threat to the region and beyond. Pakistan has much to gain from partnering with our effort in Afghanistan. But Pakistan has also sheltered the same organizations that try every single day to kill our people. We have been paying Pakistan billions and billions of dollars at the same time they are housing the very terrorists that we are fighting. But that will have to change, and that will change immediately. Another critical part of the South Asia strategy for America is to further develop its strategic partnership with India, the world's largest democracy and a key security and economic partner of the United States. We appreciate India's important contributions to stability in Afghanistan, but India makes billions of dollars in trade with the United States, and we want them to help us more with Afghanistan, especially in the area of economic assistance and development.
So that's a key part of what changed last night, was pulling in Pakistan. But as Ron Paul went into a tweet storm, we're going to talk when we come back. We don't have enough time to go into that in this segment. We're going to take a look at what Ron Paul live tweeted. He had a lot of tweets that were going out as the speech was being made. And he was very concerned that this was going to expand the war into Pakistan, that it would create more tensions between India and Pakistan. But let's take a look quickly to summarize what he is saying here. The new strategy, he says, we are not doing nation building, we are killing terrorists. He announced five core pillars to the approach to get rid of any timelines for how long U.S. troops are there. Of course, we've already been told a couple of years ago under Obama that the U.S. military had planned to stay there for decades more, at least 20 years. They don't know exactly how long they're going to stay there, but we're not going to have any timelines. He's not going to talk exactly about how many troops he's going to add, and that's fine. That's part of the tactic. If you're not going to reveal your tactics, that would be a wise thing to do. Do not say that you're going to get out at any particular time, how many troops you're going to add, how many troops you're going to delete. But, of course, the number of troops that have been discussed is about a 50% increase from what we have there, going from about 8,400 troops, adding about another 4,000 troops is what people are saying. Nevertheless, if you're not going to talk about the tactics, in other words, how many troops you're going to add, how long they're going to be there, can we not at least have a discussion of what winning looks like? What is the end game here? What is the goal? How do we know when we've finished? How do we know when we have won? We haven't won for 16 years. And then he also says we're going to include diplomatic and economic elements to fight this. We're going to get tougher on Pakistan. We're going to get India to help more with economic development, and we're going to have expanding authorities for U.S. forces to fight terrorists. What the president did not announce was how many troops would head to Afghanistan. Again, that's fine. That's part of the tactic, but we need to have a discussion of what the goal is, what the strategy is. And as Breitbart points out, Trump's America First base is going to be very unhappy with the flip-flop in Afghanistan. And we've already got a lot of people who are very unhappy with this who are speaking up. President's America First base was the biggest loser. The very day that Steve Bannon left, the generals marched Donald Trump to Camp David and told him, do an about-face on what you ran on. And that was to get out of Afghanistan. And now he says, I was wrong all along. No, he's wrong now. He was right 5 years ago. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight. Waging information warfare against pushers of fake news. You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back to Real News. I'm David Knight. It is Tuesday, August the 22nd, 2017. Last night in prime time, we had Donald Trump give a very formal, prepared speech. Question is, who prepared it for him? It didn't sound like his words. We're going to take a look at what Donald Trump said 5 years ago and up through the election. We're also going to take a look at what others have said about what he gave us last night in terms of a quote-unquote new policy towards Afghanistan. It looks like more of the same, quite frankly, except for the fact that it has now been enlarged, perhaps, into Pakistan in a very troubling move there as well. We're also going to take a look at what Obama said about this. We're going to compare the two, and we want to get your quotes, your comments about this, and that number, if you want to call in, is 800-201 800-201-2244. Again, that number is 800-201-2244. So we're going to take a look at all the different comments from people who are in politics, and then we want to get the people's voice on this, because you're the ones who voted for the agenda to put America first, not Afghanistan first. We've had Afghanistan and our wars be put over rebuilding our country, and that needs to change. Before we get to these comments, before we get to your comments, I want to tell you that some of our BuzzFeed specials have sold out, and some of them are about to sell out. And, of course, these are drastic reductions in price based on the BuzzFeed attack on InfoWars that ultimately failed, because what they found when they tested the products was that they were very high quality. They didn't expect to find that. And so we put a lot of items down to $17.76 and massive discounts on others as well. BrainForce is selling out at $17.76. That's 55% off retail. DNA Force is also selling out. That has a 20% discount, because we can't take that down to $17.76. It's a very expensive product. It's a premium product. And 20% off of that price is a huge savings on DNA Force. Also, Silver Bullet is selling out at $9.95. That is 66% off retail. Knockout is also selling out at 50% off retail. Myco ZX has already sold out. Survival Shield X2 Nascent I9 is 55% off retail at $17.76. Our B12 formula, Secret 12, so that you don't have to take injections. You can take that. It's a great tasting B12 supplement. You can just put that under your tongue. That is $17.76, 55% off retail. And we have free shipping at InfoWarsStore.com. A number of other products that I did not mention. You can go down the list and take a look at them, but you can find a lot of products that are heavily discounted. We have, as a matter of fact, one more that I'll mention. InfoWars Select Storable Food, 30 to 40% off. Plus, you can use a special coupon code, GOBLIN, for an additional 10% off. We have never had 50% off storable food in the past, but with that coupon code of GOBLIN, you can get 50% off of some of these select storable foods made in the U.S., sealed for 20 years, and then you can reseal them after you use them to extend that a little bit longer. All made in the U.S., great packaging, and again, non-GMO. Let's take a look at what Ron Paul tweeted last night. It was Zero Hedge pointed out an angry tweet storm as he was live tweeting the speech called Donald Trump a neocon. Here he says, Steve Bannon, brakes removed and neocons are feeling their oats. The next one, the military personnel are the victims of bad foreign policy. Another one, sad that these wars the politicians argue for are unconstitutional. Yet we're told we're over there to defend the Constitution. Another one, Mr. President, it's too bad you don't follow your instincts. Or as we're going to see in just a moment, what he's been saying for 5 years. Also, so far, it's very discouraging. Sounds like pure neocon foreign policy. Well, there's a good reason for that. That's what it turns out to be. The American people deserve to know when we're going to war and must give you permission through their representatives in Congress. Well, that's an interesting notion, isn't it? That we would actually follow the Constitution that we're supposed to be defending and have a declaration of war. That would require that we have a debate in Congress, a debate in the country. What does it mean to win? It's not enough to say that you're going to win. We've heard that over and over again from two presidents before Donald Trump. We don't even know what they consider to be winning. Maybe winning for them is to stay there and keep control of the poppy fields, or to get control of the rare earth minerals, or to be in control of the vast lithium reserves that are in Afghanistan. I think that's what winning is for the military-industrial complex. Another one, the emphasis on Pakistan, says Ron Paul, just means the war is going to be expanded. The emphasis on military alliance with India may well lead to a more vicious war between nuclear states, Pakistan and India. Is this smart? Another one, and this is what I just said, Afghanistan, give us your minerals and your heroin. Okay, let's. We don't have enough of a problem here in America. Let's increase the opioid epidemic just as we increase the crack cocaine epidemic so we could have our Central American wars. Big issue of the night. U.S. expanding the war into Pakistan could precipitate more conflict between a nuclear Pakistan and India, says Ron Paul. If Americans are tired of a 16-year war, he says, how will they feel about another decade or two? When will America wake up? And the last one I'm going to read to you, beware. Lindsey Graham loves Donald Trump's speech. Why are the arch neocons celebrating so much? Well, we know why they're celebrating. We know exactly why they're celebrating. As a matter of fact, if we go through and take a look at the tweet that was I put up on Libertarian, that's where you can follow us on Real News. As one individual said, Obama's 2009 speech announcing a 30,000 troop surge in Afghanistan contains so much of the same tired tropes that Trump used tonight. And he quotes Obama in 2009, and then he has Trump in 2017. Trump, Obama in 2009, as your commander-in-chief, I owe you a mission that is clearly defined. Trump, yesterday, from now on, victory will have a clear definition. Obama in 2009, the days of providing a blank check are over. Trump, 2017, our commitment is not unlimited and our support is not a blank check. And I retweeted that. I said, maybe the reason that those speeches from Obama in 2009 and Donald Trump yesterday sound the same is because we have people in the military-industrial complex writing both their speeches and their policy. Should we begin to call this the White House, the military-industrial White House? And more troops is not a strategy. It may be a tactic. It may be a failed tactic, but it is not a strategy. What does it mean to win? Does it mean that we're going to include the Taliban in the Afghanistan government? That has been really the only significant change, that we drove the Taliban out of most of the country. They have now come back into at least half of the country. And so that's why we are going to be adding 4,000 troops. Obama added 30,000 troops, and it didn't really make any difference. So why are 4,000 troops going to make a difference today? Not clear. We need to hear why that's going to be the case. And then we have this from Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. He says the new Afghanistan strategy may pave the way for a peace deal between Taliban militants and the corrupt Afghanistan government. Now that's my comment on it, the corrupt government. Bringing them legitimacy, while the U.S. leader does not consider it possible in the near future, he says, our strategy breaks from previous approaches that set artificial calendar-based deadlines. So is that really the big difference? The big difference is that you're not going to announce that you're going to be there for decades? That this is going to be a forever war? That's your big change? Perhaps, because we have McMaster writing this, don't we? He said, the Taliban is part of a path to peace and political legitimacy through a negotiated political settlement to end the war. We stand ready to support peace talks between Afghan government and the Taliban without preconditions. And after an effective military effort, perhaps it will be possible to have a political settlement that includes elements of the Taliban in Afghanistan. Why are we there? Stay with us when we come back. We're going to take some of your calls about this. 800-201-2244 if you want to comment.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back to Real News. I'm David Knight. I gave out the wrong number for our phone lines here. This is just the second day of our show. I gave it as an 800 number. It is actually an 888 number. Still toll-free, but that number is 888-201-2244. 888-201-2244 if you'd like to call in and comment. I'd like to hear your comments about the new policy of Donald Trump. It's not a new policy for America. It's actually a very old policy. This is a war that's been going on for 16 years. As I just read you in the last segment that we had, it sounds exactly like what we heard from Barack Obama in 2009 at the beginning of his administration. Now we have the generals who have dictated this policy. It looks exactly like what they would want to have. As a matter of fact, Breitbart's title says, his McMaster's voice is Trump's foreign policy, his Afghanistan policy. That different from Obama's? No, it isn't. And it is coming from McMaster. The very day that they drove Steve Bannon out of the administration, that day they went to Camp David, that day they came in. And over the weekend, we heard Defense Secretary Mattis, one of the generals, say Donald Trump came in with a very different opinion about this. And he has now changed. And we're going to give him a couple of days to think about how he's going to sell that to the American people. So I guess maybe they gave him some of the leftover speechwriters from the Obama administration, as well as the leftover policy planners from the Obama administration. We also read you the comments that Ron Paul was making as the speech was going live. We have an op-ed opinion from Rand Paul, his son, yesterday. And he was pointing out that this is now 16 years on. It's past time to bring our troops home from Afghanistan. As a matter of fact, when we go and look at some of the tweets in a moment of what Donald Trump said, he actually said that Rand Paul was right. We do need to bring them home. He said that back in 2011. Well, Rand Paul was right 6 years ago, and so was Donald Trump. Today, Rand Paul is still right. Donald Trump is not. As Rand Paul points out, there was significant mission creep in Afghanistan. He said, we went from striking back against those that we were told attacked us. And quite frankly, let's just understand. Do you really seriously believe that men in caves in Afghanistan took over planes and crashed two of them, causing three steel skyscrapers to fall into their footprints after only two of these buildings were hit, immediately falling into their footprint? That is the basis of not only the Afghanistan war, but also the Patriot Act and Homeland Security. And we need to confront the nonsense of the 9/11 narrative that we have been given to excuse this radical change in the Constitution. As Thomas Drake has pointed out when I interviewed him, he said, people do not realize how fundamentally the government changed after 9/11. The NSA whistleblowers like Drake and William Binney do understand, and they're very upset about it. You should be very upset about it. You should understand how they use this, and you should understand the lies that are at the heart of 9/11. Before we go further, I want to, and we got the phone lines filling up here, I want to go to one of our callers here who is calling about the ship hacks that I mentioned earlier. I talked about the hacks on the high seas. We've had two cruisers this year, as well as two destroyers, the most recent one happening over the weekend, that have had issues, had collisions. The two destroyers hit commercial vessels. As we pointed out, it's also affected commercial ships. They've had their GPS spoofed. So the GPS showed that they were not even in the ocean, but 20 miles inland near an airport. That is the danger that we're seeing here. Now, that's not the only thing that is happening. These two cruisers at the beginning of the year, they had accidents that did not involve another commercial ship. But when you look at the Aegis system, here's a system, very complicated. It is able to track 100 targets simultaneously and deal with them, and yet it could not detect or deal with a 600-foot freighter. This is two times the length of a football field. And so we have someone who wants to talk about that right now. Thank you for joining us, Goat Tree. Go ahead.
Great job, David. Hope this echo doesn't bother you.
Oh, no, that's fine. Thank you. Go ahead.
Do you remember the message I sent you earlier in August inquiring about an operation?
Yes.
I do believe we're starting to see the results of it.
Hmm.
GPS is very easily hacked.
Mm-hmm.
And these warships are nothing but autonomous vehicles, no different.
Yes.
Than these cars.
Yes. And that should give us all pause, shouldn't it? If we can have a situation where you have the most sophisticated navigational system with radar and GPS, and even, I would add, visual backup. We have, I think it's five people on the bridge. We have a couple of people fore and one person aft. So there is human backup, human eyes on the situation, but they're relying. And of course, I don't know if weather was a condition there that would shut down the human backup in either of these collisions, but they have a lot of redundancy and they have a lot of sophistication and they are hardened. They're militarized. So if we can have that happen with a military ship, what is going to happen on our highways with autonomous cars, especially as they start talking about a complete takeover of our infrastructure, where we're having the cars communicate with each other and communicating with the infrastructure, which is the government, telling the government exactly what you're doing. Go ahead, Goat Tree.
Well, cars aren't driving around with missiles on them that have the ability to lay waste to the world.
That's right. That's right. Makes it much more dangerous, doesn't it? And it also leaves us vulnerable if we want to try to protect ourselves. It means that these ships, and we've just had two of them, costing about $2 billion apiece, be taken out with collisions with massive freighters. I mean, that is beyond belief. And also the cost in human life that we've seen. 7 people in the first one, 10 people in this most recent one, and then the people who survived are now the scapegoats for what is happening here. We've seen the commanders of the first ship that they had the investigation of, the destroyer that was 2 months ago in June. They have just removed them from command. They may be facing a court-martial. Their lives are ruined, and it may not be their system. It most likely is now starting to look like some kind of a hack of their navigational system, doesn't it?
Exactly. And from what I've been seeing, and as we've talked on back channels, I'm afraid you're starting to see the very first symptoms of cyber war.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot give you a lot of details. I don't want to feed the black cats.
Yes.
But it's very easy to spoof these GPSs. And if you set up a mirror system, and you know, we do have North Korean satellites now.
Mm-hmm.
You can get into the system a dozen ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not being speculative, but I do fear that you're starting to see the first glimpses, maybe a beta test of security systems.
Yes, I think you're right. I think it is some kind of a beta test that we're seeing here. You know, we had, after the first destroyer in June, the incident happened. A lot of people were saying that, you know, I saw a lot of debate on Twitter and elsewhere. People were saying, you know, what's going on with this? We do have human backup. We've got very sophisticated systems here. This must have been a terror attack by the people in that freighter. And yet we've seen this happen all over the South Pacific area where this fleet is based. And we've seen this happen now multiple times. And so, as you're pointing out, this is probably something when we combine in, this is something I had not seen before, the incident that involved 20 commercial vessels that was on June 17th. That was just a few days before this destroyer incident, the first destroyer incident, the Fitzgerald. We had 20 different commercial vessels, and it made it appear with the GPS spoofing as if they were 20 miles inland near an airport. So that gives us a clue that it is something like you're talking about, perhaps a mirroring system. Perhaps it's coming from Russia. Perhaps it is coming from North Korea because they have satellites. Anything else you'd like to add?
You remember how a while back we were laughing about the lottery being hacked?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the way this was done, they reset clocks.
Mm-hmm.
Clock on your computer is the most vulnerable thing there is.
Yes.
You may have someone going in, did a man-in-the-middle attack, reset the clocks to an hour earlier, and the computer's reading their old coordinates.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all sorts of variables here.
Yes, yes. Very disturbing, especially when we look at the situation in North Korea. When we look at the foreign policy that's in Afghanistan, we're going to take more of a look at that. We're going to get to your phone calls when we come back. 888-201-2244. Thank you, Goat Tree. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Studios in Austin, Texas. It's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
Welcome back to The Real News program. I'm David Knight, and it's the top of the hour. This hour, we're going to be joined by Lynn Ulbrich and her son, Ross Ulbrich. has been accused of running the Silk Road Project. He's actually been convicted. They gave him a life sentence for running a website. So we're going to talk to her about the drug war, about the implications of internet freedom. And she's going to be joining us at the bottom of this hour. And we're going to have, in the next hour, we're going to have Lee Stranahan. And, of course, he's somebody who knows Steve Bannon well. I want to talk to him about this massive reversal that we have seen in Afghanistan policy. And the massive reversal, let's put it this way, of America First that we have seen from Donald Trump that happened immediately after Steve Bannon left the White House. So he's going to be joining us in the third hour. Let's take a look at some news. We were talking earlier about the collision. Just had a caller talking to us about the hacks on the high seas, the spoofing of GPS that has tremendous implications for us as we're being pushed into a future where our cars are going to be controlled remotely for us. And that is something that could cause massive havoc here in America on our roads, but it is causing massive havoc for the most sophisticated navigational equipment that we have in the world, and that those are the Aegis navigational systems and the weapon systems that have radar that is so sophisticated it can track 100 targets simultaneously, and yet it collides with a 600-foot commercial vessel with fatal results. And this is the fourth time we have had navigational failures from that fleet in this year, and two of those have been cruisers, two of those in the last 2 months have been destroyers. And as we pointed out earlier, we had a situation where two different times in 2014, 2016, perhaps those are proof of concepts, we had the USS Donald Cook, also an Aegis destroyer, it was reported that their radar system, that their targeting system was shut down by a flyover of a Russian jet. There were denials about that, and yet as we look at these recent crashes, that seems to be something that we need to take a look at. There's also been a crash in Pennsylvania with a train. Now it's been up to 40 people have been taken to the hospital. At least four are in critical condition. Also, as we look at economic news, we see that Fiat Chrysler is rumored to be being bought by China's Great Wall. That's right. The Great Wall is going to take a road trip here into the U.S., and if you recall, under the Obama administration, there was a sweetheart deal after the automotive companies and the financial meltdown of 2008. He gave Chrysler to Fiat for a song. Now Fiat is looking to flip that deal, and they think that they may have a buyer, although nothing is official. There is a Chinese car company called the Great Wall, and they say that they are interested in purchasing Fiat Chrysler. Also, we've had Donald Trump nicks Obama's ban on plastic bottles at national parks. Not just bringing them in, but even selling them in national parks. And of course, I guess it would be okay to sell bottled drinks. I'm not really sure what they were selling at the parks. But in order to effect that ban, the Park Service had spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in some locations to put new water filling stations in at the Grand Canyon and at Zion National Park, not including the amount of money that the Park Service lost from selling bottled water. And to give you an idea of how significant the amount of money that they spent on putting in fresh water filling stations, Citizens Against Government Waste point out that the Park Service spent $288,000 on just 10 water stations at the Grand Canyon and $447,000 on three in Zion National Park. That's $150,000 they spent on each of those water stations in Zion Park, where it worked out to be about $30,000 in the other location. Meanwhile, we have a lawsuit against the CIA torture psychologist that has now been settled. They were already given a pass and not charged. We've talked in the past to John Kiriakou, the whistleblower. He went to jail. But the psychologist who trained the CIA got about $80 million, and now that lawsuit has been privately settled, and it looks like nothing is going to change. Stay with us. We'll be right back with your calls. The number is 888-201-2244.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back to the real news. is. I'm David Knight. I want to go to our phones here. We've got a couple of people who are holding. If you want to call in, that number is 888-201-2244. That's 888-201-2244. Let's go to Uncle Sam in New Orleans. And I know who this guy is. I've met you before. Thanks for calling in.
Hello, David. Congratulations on your show.
Well, thank you. And thank you for your support. For those of you who don't know who we're talking to, if you've been in New Orleans in the French Quarter, he's got a booth set up there, and he broadcasts Alex radio program. He dresses up as Uncle Sam, and he engages people in political conversation, and he films it and puts it up on YouTube, and he has some very good interchanges with people on the street on an ongoing basis there. But go ahead. Tell us what you wanted to talk about today.
Oh, thank you for that plug, David. You are an angel, and I will say this unequivocally, the best man in news.
Well, thank you.
I'm at a conundrum here. I don't know what to do now. I hang a liar sign around my Trump cutout or something.
Yeah, he's become a cutout for McMaster, hasn't he?
Oh,
at least on this foreign policy, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can forgive him almost everything else that hasn't got done, because you can blame it on Congress, accepting, of course, the lack of indictments coming out of the Department of Justice. That is his thing. It's been sticking in the craw. But this, I mean, I remember the speech or the interview he had the day after 9/11, and Trump knows the truth about 9/11.
Yes.
He knows it.
Yes.
Yet he got up there and lied to us. He wants us to swallow the same lies we've been hearing for 16 years.
And what you're referencing, and we've played that clip, we should try to find that clip and play that again. But he said, I don't know, the day after he says, I don't know, I've seen a lot of buildings brought down in demolition. That just looked like a building coming down in demolition. And if you want to know what that looks like, it's very easy for you to do that kind of research yourself. You don't have to be a building expert. Just go to YouTube and look up building demolitions, and you'll see that what they do is they blow it out, and the whole thing just comes down in free fall. It did not come down pancake floor by floor as they tried to explain it away. No, it just came down in free fall, and it was three buildings that came down. There were only two planes. So even if you want to say to people that the two Twin Towers fell down because they were hit by planes and there was something special about the intense heat from those planes, there was a third building that was not hit that collapsed the same way. And we have the building's owner on record. We can hear him saying, pull it, which is what they say when they demolish buildings. Go ahead, Uncle Sam.
Yeah, I mean, the mountain of evidence that is there hardly even needs to be going over again. I mean, if you don't know that that there are questions about 9/11 right now, you were either willfully ignorant or stupid.
Yes. And we know that Donald Trump knew that it was building demolition. He saw that. He commented on the day after. Yeah.
Well, this is a complete conundrum. I mean, where do we go from here? This is it. I mean, I've already talked to people on the street that have told me this is it. They're bailing out. They're getting a place in the country. They're getting off the grid, and they're just going to wait for the collapse. I mean, there are so many people that are going to abandon him on this issue.
Well, it is very concerning, but we see some of the things that he's done. For instance, when he first came in, he stopped the TPP. That was a big deal. The other part of it that was a big deal, as we talked about, there's several different ways that they were going to destroy the sovereignty of the United States. By having the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the Transatlantic Partnerships, they would take control of our economy away from us and turn it over to a transnational body that would run our economy in the same way that the EU is running the economy of Britain. And so shutting that down was a big deal. He didn't get us out of the climate change agreement for about 6 months. Why? Because he was being opposed by people in the White House. And yet, because he had a good appointment with Scott Pruitt at the EPA, those people eventually, with Trump, kept him to his agenda. Instead of continually telling him something different and moving him away from that agenda, he had a lot of resistance on that, but he still had a good appointment at the EPA. Now that Bannon has left, he doesn't have anybody that is pushing for his agenda to help support him. Bannon did not make Trump president. Bannon did not create the agenda, but Bannon was there to push the agenda forward. And he had a whiteboard with the agenda promises to remind him, to remind Trump to know what they had won the election on, what the American people wanted, and what they had promised, so they could keep that promise. Now that he's gone, and now that we have three generals who are basically running this administration, apparently, we're now back to the same foreign policy that we had under Obama. And as I read earlier in the hour, you can look at the same phrases being used in 2009 at the beginning of the Obama administration, now 8 years later, being used at the beginning of the Trump administration. The policy, the speeches are being written by the same people. And that is very concerning. And then, of course, Trump is blocked on the major legislative issues like Obamacare and tax cuts. He's being blocked by the GOP establishment. And that's the real concern. Go ahead, Uncle Sam.
Yeah, you were absolutely right. And believe me, when you go to my videos, and if you, it's Michael C. Barry, D-I, capital B-A-R-I, and YouTube, or Badass Uncle Sam.
Okay, yeah, give that address again, because we had a little bit of a break on that. Your YouTube.
Yeah, it's either going to be under my name, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, Michael C. Barry, D-I, capital B-A-R-I. Or you can do badassunclesam.com.
Okay.
But I have, of course, if you look at my videos, no one has probably publicly been supporting Trump more than I have out there in the street.
Yes. Yeah, you got a standee of him there, yeah.
Yeah, and this is just, I don't know where I'm going to go with this, so I'm going to have to go back to, just completely slamming them. And I have applauded all of it. Like you say, the TPP, the busting the pedophiles, the torpedoing the Paris Accords. These things are champion things. But this is like being married to a woman who cooks well, she's intelligent, she keeps the house clean, raises the kids. I mean, you name it. But then you come home and you find her in bed with your worst enemy. What do you do?
Yeah, exactly.
This is it. This is like a breaking point. I cannot stand someone to get up there and lie to my face, telling me something I know not to be true. I can't do it. I can't go there.
I think, and we've said this before, even Obama said to his voters, he said, you need to put pressure on me to hold me to my agenda. The American people need to speak up. They need to say, we wanted, and you said you were going to put America first. Now you're putting Afghanistan first. We're not getting in any kind of infrastructure changes. We're not seeing tax cuts. We're not seeing health care changes. And I understand a large part of that is the establishment Republicans who never wanted to have Obamacare taken away. They simply wanted it as a wedge issue, and they're very upset to have somebody who appeared to be serious about doing that. If we put pressure on Trump, I think we can make a difference, because we've had victories from Donald Trump. Let's understand that it hasn't been like it would have been with Hillary Clinton. With Hillary Clinton, it would have been nothing in the glass. At least here, we can say the glass is half full. It may not be 90% full, but it is at least... we've seen some very positive things on some very, very fundamental and important issues. This is a fundamental issue. It is very important. He's made the wrong decision. We need to put pressure on him. Like I said yesterday, it's like he's the guy steering the canoe in the back with a paddle, and we've got the generals on one side paddling very hard. Are the American people going to get on the other side and paddle? Because if we don't, even if Donald Trump is trying to steer this thing from the back, he's not going to be able to do it with the generals paddling on the one side of the canoe. We got to take a break. Thank you for joining us, Uncle Sam. We're going to get to these other callers when we come back. And we have Lynn Ulbricht at the bottom of the hour to talk to us about the Silk Road case, how important that is for all of us, but also the effect that it has on her son and what you can do to help that, to help yourself. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back to the Real Real News. I'm David Knight. We're going to go to your phone calls. We've got a couple of people holding, and we're going to have Lynn Ulbricht, mother of the man convicted for Silk Road, for running the website Silk Road. His name is Ross Ulbricht. She's going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour in the next segment. Before we get back to our phone calls and the news, I want to remind you that our BuzzFeed special items are selling out. We still have some items there, and we have free shipping on the site. Brainforce is selling out very quickly at 55% discount. That's now down to $17.76. We have a 20% discount on DNA Force, which is a massive savings on that very expensive premium product. That's 20% off for DNA Force. Silver Bullet is selling out. That's 66% off at just $9.95. Knockout is selling out at $14.95. That's 50% off retail. Oil of Oregano is now at $17.76. That is 40% off. BioTrue Selenium, $17.76. That's 29% off retail. Do you see a pattern developing here? Most of these products are $17.76. So that means that there are massive discounts from 30 to 55% off the usual price for many different items like Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, Secret 12, our vitamin B12. We also have the biggest discount we have ever had on InfoWars Select Storable Food. We've run specials from time to time where we discount that 30 to 40% off. Now we have a code that you can get an additional 10% off. That would be 50% off the price of Select Storable Food if you enter in the coupon code GOBLIN. And so if you put in Goblin, you can get 50% off storable foods as well as free shipping. This is an amazing discount off these storable foods because shipping is a big part of the cost of shipping big items like that. Also, we have a new product, Super Blue Fluoride Free Mouthwash. That is $17.76 right out of the gate. So take a look at the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We have free shipping. Take advantage of that while it lasts because we have a lot of products that are selling out very quickly at these massive discounts. 50 to 66% off many of our most popular items. And one of them, Myco ZX, has already sold out. Let's go back to our phone calls here. But before we do, I want to play real quickly. We've been talking about Afghanistan, the U-turn, if you want to call it. I call it an about face. I think that the generals brought Trump to Camp David and gave him an order. About face. We're going to do the same thing we have always done. We're not going to get out of Afghanistan. We're not going to define what winning is. We're simply going to tell people we got a new strategy. We're going to have troop increases and we're going to stay there, but we're not going to tell you how long we're going to stay there. We're going to tell you how many troops we're putting there. And most importantly, they're not going to tell us what a win looks like. They're just going to tell us we're going to win. And there's not going to be any blank check. We heard that exact same statement from Barack Obama at the beginning of his administration 8 years ago. And so we have a clip here I want to play you from Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters. He was on Fox News, and he talks about what has been happening there in our counterinsurgency war. Remember, we have never won a counterinsurgency war. Here's what Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters says.
The Pashto majority in Afghanistan views the Taliban as a home team. Knows after 16 years, the Taliban, we've hammered them with everything we've got. And they're still there. People are still volunteering to fight for the Taliban. And they're not willing to die for the Kabul government. If we can't, I mean, it's so obvious that this is an impossible situation. But at the end of the day, look. This is ugly. I have no sympathy with the Taliban. They're a bunch of brutal, woman-hating pederasts. But by God, for the locals, we're the redcoats and they're the Minutemen.
Yeah, but it doesn't help when Pakistan keeps offering safe haven for the Taliban.
That's certainly true, but at the same time, Pakistan has certainly offered safe havens, and we've tolerated it, and that was wrong. Mm. But look at, we spent well over $1 trillion total in Afghanistan. We've had the jets. We've had the sophisticated weapons, the sophisticated intelligence. We've given the Afghan military equipment. We've given them training. We've poured money into the Afghan government, and the Taliban are still there. And I had a very high-ranking general, one who I respect very much, I'll leave his name out of it. Over the years, we've talked about this, and he kept telling the same thing. The Taliban are lousy fighters. But you know what? The Minutemen at Concord and Lexington were lousy fighters. They lost tactically in the U.S., I should say, in the early years of our revolution. We kept losing tactically, but we won strategically. And what the Taliban are doing is losing tactically. They can't. They're not. They're lousy fighters compared to our troops. Mm. But they're winning strategically, and we can't. We just can't face up to it.
And what he's reminding us is that going back to the American Revolution, major superpowers, empires, do not win wars of what they now call counterinsurgency. And that even that is kind of Pentagonese. What they're saying is you can't subjugate a people. You can't invade a country and hope that you're going to win. Eventually, those people will hang on and they will drive you out of their country. And we're told, well, we've got to fight the Taliban. And we now have to go into Pakistan and fight the Taliban in Pakistan. And yet Rex Tillerson is saying that our arch enemy, the Taliban, we could bring them into peace talks and we could make them part of a legitimate government. So what have we been fighting for? What does winning look like? I want to go to our phone calls because we've had a couple of other things that we've talked about today, too. We've had several people call in about the hacking on the high seas and what the implications of that are. And as we pointed out, we've had four collisions this year. Two of these collisions with cruisers at the beginning of the year did not involve ships that had GPS. But now we have had two destroyers in the last 2 months that have hit massive commercial shipping vessels. The other one just happened a couple of days ago, hit a 600-foot freighter. And this is coming from a ship that is supposed to be able to track 100 targets simultaneously in a military environment. We've also seen commercial vehicles had their GPS spoofed. And so I want to talk to Habu. He's calling about the Pacific ship collision. Thank you for joining us, Habu.
Yeah, hello, David. And congratulations on this new gig that you have. And
thank you.
Best of luck to you.
Well, thank you. We couldn't do it without your support. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you very much. It's my pleasure, of course. Just two quick points. I think increasingly, because the United States military forces are so powerful in a conventional sense, all the lesser nations are going to go to this alternative kind of asymmetrical type of challenge, meaning use electronic or the... You know what is it when they detonate that huge the
EMP?
Yeah, EMP, right.
Yes.
So that is the only way they're going to deal with the United States instead of taking it on head on. But and if I may just go into my second point, I didn't tell your Nico that I was going to talk about this, but I heard you talk wax on it a lot, and my complete disappointment with President Trump. Not because of anything, not about the kind of news that has gone on in the last 2 weeks, but how he has continued the status quo in the area of war and international affairs. And
yes.
What I see really is that the international, you know, the military industrial complex is the thing that is stands to gain the most by keeping these things going on.
I agree. It's been impossible to get rid of these people. Sorry, we got to go to a break, and we're coming up the next segment. If you want to hang on, Habu, I understand if you have to go, but we're going to be talking to Lynn Elbrecht coming up in the next segment.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back to Real News. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Lynn Elbrecht. She is the mother of Ross Elbrecht, a 32-year-old who was never charged with being violent, never charged with harming anyone. He was charged and convicted for being associated with Silk Road, and you've probably heard of that website. That was a dark part of the dark web. It was based on a libertarian philosophy that allowed people to buy and sell whatever they wished. Some of that was legal, some of that was illegal. The government did not want that to exist. It was a very dangerous precedent for them. And in response, we have seen some very dangerous precedents be set in this trial. Denial of Fourth Amendment. And the types of things in the trial that we are now seeing in Bunkerville. At the Bundy Ranch standoff, we had a situation where we had a lot of neighbors coming together, people from an adjacent state that were chafing under the heavy hand of the BLM, the violent hand, as we saw in Bunkerville. They came together to defend their neighbors, and the government can't have that happening either. They don't want a free market on the internet, and they don't want people getting free from the heavy hand of government. If you are a rancher, a farmer, a miner, a logger, we have to understand that the government is going to use any means that it feels that it can get away with. And that's what we're seeing now at the trial in Bunkerville. Many of the things that I see here on the summary from the website freeross.org, if you want to find out more about this and find out how you can help in the appeal process, many of the things that we see here are happening now in the Bunkerville trial. Defense cross-examination repeatedly curtailed or denied. Defense witnesses blocked from testifying. Unproven, uncharged, unconvicted allegations that we see brought up of people trying to portray them as violent when no violence happened in either incident. So these types of tactics the government uses, and what we have seen with one person convicted in Bunkerville, draconian sentences. Now, Ross Ulbricht, the 32-year-old, has been sentenced to a double life sentence without parole plus 40 years. And that's the same type of draconian treatment that we see being doled out to the people who were at Bunkerville. You have to understand how broad this is, and you have to understand how our legal system is being completely destroyed. And of course, it has issues for the particular case. In the case of Bunkerville, we're talking about land use. We're talking about the role of government. We're talking about private property and the destruction of those rights. Here, we're talking about privacy. We're talking about the internet. We're saying, can you send somebody to jail for life for running a website, even though they weren't directly involved in a particular crime? So giving us more details about that and telling us about where this particular case is that is now in appeal is Lynn Ulbricht, the mother of Ross Ulbricht. Thank you for joining us, Lynn.
Oh, my pleasure. Always a pleasure to talk to you, David. You always get the big picture so well.
And, well, thank you.
That's exactly, you summed it up perfectly. I actually met the wife of one of the people, one of the Bundys who's in prison recently in Las Vegas, and a trial was going on at the time. And just seeing what happens, and of course, I know personally what happens to people who are in the crosshairs of the government and in the prisons. It's really horrible what's going on and frightening, and we should all be concerned because it can happen to anybody.
Yes, if they really want to get somebody because they feel that a dangerous precedent of freedom is being established, they will turn it into an absolute kangaroo court, something that is straight out of the Dark Ages or straight out of the Star Chambers that we saw in England. The types of things that we had the Bill of Rights created to stop. They exactly. will ignore everything about that. They'll ignore all of our rights that were expressed, that come from God, but they were expressed in the Bill of Rights. They'll ignore all that. They'll ignore their laws. They will take people off. They will, and for instance, in Bunkerville, they're simply saying you cannot mention anything about the BLM, even in your own defense, even to explain what is happening. But tell us about your particular case. Let's start with the warrantless seizure of the server there.
Right. Well, that was never allowed to be pursued, even though the Christopher Tarbell, who is very involved in the case and the lead investigator, claimed how he found the server, and experts all over the world cried foul and said, that is gibberish. That is obviously not true. It couldn't possibly happen. We called for an evidentiary hearing to prove it, and that never happened. And, you know, this is a government agent under oath saying things that people all over the world, experts, said was a lie, basically. I wanted to also add, you know, you were talking about privacy, and that's absolutely right, because the government said anyone who uses Tor, which was what was used with the Silk Road, has criminal intent. Now, Tor is used by dissidents, it's used by journalists, and anyone who maybe doesn't want the government tracking what they're doing. But they are claiming in writing that it has criminal intent. Also, the other thing I think that was very threatening was the use of Bitcoin on Silk Road. It's become much more known now. It wasn't very known. Chuck Schumer, who was behind this, was on the Senate Finance Committee. And I believe that was the reason. And, you know, and it is a drug case. And I'm not for drugs. And I really want to make that clear that I'm not defending drug use. I'm not even particularly defending sites that allow sales of drugs. Although, like you said, there are many things on there. Some were restricted, by the way, things that created victims, like child pornography was not permitted, stolen property, violence, that sort of thing. But it was pretty open. It was an open, fairly unregulated internet market. But that is the threat. I think you're right. And having a currency that was out of control was very threatening. The other people who were charged in the Silk Road case had very low sentences, and they were actually selling drugs. They were vendors. The biggest vendor, drug dealer on there was got 10 years. So that indicates to me quite clearly that it wasn't really about drugs. But the drug war itself is not about drugs, and we've discussed
this
in the past.
That's right.
It's America's longest war. It's been going on over
even longer than Afghanistan. Yeah. And if we look at the drug war, they don't have to win a war. They don't have to have any measurable gains to keep this thing going. As you point out, the drug war has been going on for 46 years. And people don't realize that 10 years before Richard Nixon declared a war on drugs, we had the UN come in with an agenda. They had all the schedules that we see, the schedule 1 through 4, and they had all the drugs put into those different schedules. Now we finally have some people like Trey Gowdy saying, why is marijuana a schedule 1 drug? How did that get there? He asked the guy who's running the drug policy in the federal government. He says, yeah, I'll have to ask. I don't really know. Because we've had all of these states say, yeah, it does have medical uses, and supposedly things that are in schedule 1 do not have medical uses. But we know how it got there. The United Nations put it there. So the United Nations created this agenda for a drug war, just like they created the UN Agenda 21, which is behind the private property and the property rights, I should say, because all these people don't own the property outright like you own your home, but they're coming for your home as well if you don't have any property rights. But in this particular case, they don't want to have a free, anonymous internet. They don't want to have free, anonymous currency like Bitcoin that they don't control and can't manipulate. And that's the heart of this issue. As you pointed out, the drug dealers got very light sentences compared to Ross, the person that they really wanted to make an example of to shut down this, was to say, you're not going to have a free internet. And if you don't have a free internet in commerce, it's not going to be very long before you don't have a free internet and free speech either. Because they Absolutely. Can shut and manipulate everything down. And we're seeing the effects of that now as well.
Well, they used Ross's political and philosophical views in sentencing to bolster the sentence and justify it by saying it was a dangerous philosophy. It was basically, as you pointed out, a libertarian laissez-faire philosophy. And the judge, again, this cannot be tolerated. And this is so dangerous that he can never get out of his cage. Because what if he comes back out and still believes in this philosophy? And so this was used in sentencing, which is, of course, a First Amendment violation, blatant First Amendment violation. And
we got to go to a break.
The court didn't seem to think it was a problem.
We got to go to a break, Len. When we come back, I want to talk about the corruption from the federal investigators, and I want to talk about the evidence tampering that was going on there. This is a corrupt court system. We'll be right back with Len Ulbricht. Stay with us.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Rolling, 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 rolling.
Welcome back to the Real News. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Len Ulbricht. And of course, it's her son, Ross Ulbricht, 32 years old. Has been sentenced to a double life sentence plus 40 years, a draconian sentence. And what we've seen in his case is what we're now seeing in all the high-profile cases where the government is very worried about a precedent of freedom. And in order to stop the freedom of people having privacy, having private property rights, like we're seeing in the case in the Bunkerville trial, they are now using to get draconian sentences, they are now throwing out all the fundamental things that we have put in place to safeguard, to make sure that we have an impartial judge, to make sure that we have a fully informed jury. And I'm just talking about knowing about the facts. If they find out that you really are an informed juror and that you know that you are there to judge not just the facts, but also the law itself as to whether or not it is a good law, whether or not it's being applied properly, they will throw you out. if they find that out. So if you know that and you're called for a jury trial, and there's very few jury trials anymore because they ramp up the charges with phony charges, so most people plea down to what the government wanted to throw them in jail for in the first place. Most people don't stand up for their private due process. But if you do go to a jury trial, and it is something that is important to the government, like in this particular case, the freedom of the internet, the freedom of having an anonymous free currency that's not manipulated by the government, those are both on the table. So they pulled out all the stops. They make sure that they shut down cross-examination of defense witnesses, as we see in Bunkerville now. They're putting parameters on questions and things that can be asked of people. They cannot mention the BLM. They cannot say anything that the BLM was doing there so that they can make the individuals look dangerous. That's what they were doing with Ross Ulbricht. They brought in, and she and Lynn can talk about this, the allegations that there was murder for hire. And it turns out that they were also, that was not proven. It was not true. They did not establish that. But they do that to make the people look dangerous. So they destroy your due process in court, and then they hand you a draconian sentence if you're coming after their freedoms. I want to get back to Lynn. I want her to tell us where the case is right now. It's an appeal. If you want to donate to this cause, you can go to freeross.org. You can find out about what's going on. This is a very important case, just like the one in Bunkerville. It affects your individual rights, not just on these individual issues, but also on whether or not you're going to be able to get a free, fair trial from this government. And they have basically thrown out the Bill of Rights and the rule of law, and we've returned back to some kind of a middle-aged tyranny in the courts now, and we're seeing this happening in case after case. It doesn't matter what it is. Real quickly, we need to do a plug here. BuzzFeed special is going to be stopped soon, and we're having many items that are about to sell out. We've had Myco ZX has already sold out. We have massive discounts on things like BrainForce, and that is at 55% off discount. That's about to sell out. Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine and Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula, those are both 55% off retail at $17.76. We have oil of oregano at 40% off. That's $17.76. And then we have some big ticket items like DNA Force. That is a very expensive supplement that we sell. That is 20% off. That's a big savings. And then some other things like the Alexa Pure Pro Water Filter and the Alexa Pure Breeze Air Filter. Those are expensive items. They are now discounted 25% each. So take a look at the items that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We also have free shipping. And I'll add this again, InfoWars Select Storable Food, 30 to 40% off. And if you type in a coupon code of Goblin, you get an additional 10% off. That would be 50% off of those storable foods that last for 20 years. I think maybe 25 years. I have to look at the description. But they are very durable in terms of the packaging, and they can be resealed once you open them. They're GMO-free, all-natural, made in the United States, and it is free shipping on that very expensive item. So take a look at the sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com, part of this BuzzFeed special. They are selling out very quickly. All right, let's get back to Lynn. Thank you for holding, Lynn. Let's talk about where this case is right now, some of the things that they did to make Ross look dangerous. Talk about how it was shown that we had people logging into the Dread Pirate Roberts account 7 weeks after Ross was elected. We've had some federal investigators that were stealing money, and I think they were convicted, weren't they, of stealing money?
Yeah.
And so we had people in the federal government that had access to this that could steal money. They could manipulate things and make your son look bad using that account. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's so much, you know, it's the gift that keeps on giving. You keep finding things. Two corrupt agents are in prison. The jury was not allowed to know of their existence, even though it was known, and they were under investigation. They could not
because we can't have the government look bad. You know, they do everything to make somebody else look bad, but you can't know anything about the government's criminal actions, just like we see elsewhere.
Well, that's true, and it might cast reasonable doubt on the evidence that they were being presented with, because these guys were experts. They were crypto experts. They could change anything. They could act as Dread Pirate Roberts, this pseudonym of the person that was running, or people that were running the site. And yes, they did use uncharged allegations to bolster the sentence of murder for hire. They were never brought to trial, never presented to a jury, but were allowed to talk about them at trial and prejudice the jury, but never prove anything. And apparently they're allowed to do this. And yeah. And yet never, the jury never ruled on it. It was never proven. And it was also used as sentencing.
So you prejudice the jury, and of course he was held there without bail. We see this happening.
Well, deprived of bail because of it too.
Yeah, yeah. So, and we see this happening in the other trials. Yes. And quite frankly, this is something that's going to be happening all over this country, I believe, if we have the so-called bail reform, because what they're going to do is say, well, if we're not concerned about you, we're not going to have bail. We're just going to let you free pre-trial. But if we think that you're a repeat offender or particularly dangerous, or they don't like you, like the case of your son, then you're not going to get bail at all with bail reform. Now, that's what we're seeing happening with some marijuana offenders in New Jersey after they did reform there, and now they're talking about that nationwide. So your case hits so many different areas, and it's very important for people to understand how it impacts their individual freedoms. Tell us about the appeal process now and how people can help.
Yeah, well, we did. Ross did appeal. You know, the corrupt agents not being known to the jury, big to me, a pretty big thing. The general warrants, as you referenced, which were unconstitutional warrants, basically used, and the sentence itself. The appellate court in New York denied the entire appeal. It is now including the sentence, and they, you know, said, well, maybe we wouldn't have given that sentence, but the judge had, it was within her discretion. So now we have petitioned to say, please rehear it based on, you know, some important things, such as that First Amendment violation at the sentencing is one of the arguments. And we're waiting to hear. It's not very many cases are reheard by the Second Circuit. And then the next step in the process is to petition the Supreme Court. That's your next step.
Well, yeah. You know, it's absolutely amazing to me when I look at Ross's case, and again, the Bunkerville trial, that you could tell that you could say we're not going to let a defense witness testify, or that you could say that that they can't talk about the government's actions, particularly when in your case, the government has control of the account after he's arrested and they're stealing money and they're convicted of crimes and they can't even talk about that. That's the most amazing thing to me. To shut down all of this ability, you're told in the Sixth Amendment that you have the right to cross-examine your accusers, to bring people to testify in your defense. They shut all that down, and you can't talk about the actions of these corrupt federal investigators who had the keys to this entire website.
Exactly. And then post-trial, it was discovered, the defense team kept sifting through, because they bury you in material to go through. That's another tactic. But found evidence of tampering of what was shown to the jury. It was tampered with. And also of someone, as you mentioned, logging in as Dread Pirate Roberts after Ross was already arrested for 7 weeks. This is post-trial, so it'll take another trial to be able to bring that forward. There are so many things that are stacked against a person who is accused in this country now, and it's not the way it was supposed to be. And right. It's filling our prisons. And I think it's all part of this money. I think the drug war is a huge failure stopping people from using drugs, but it is a great success in terms of expanding government power and money and decimating our rights. And the life sentences, they're just giving out life sentences like crazy. Like you said, the draconian sentence, 17,000 nonviolent people are serving life in our prisons like Ross.
But let's understand that in your particular case, what they're upset about is a free internet and a free currency, and they're going to make sure that doesn't happen, and they will violate every one of their rules to make sure that doesn't happen. FreeRoss.org if you want to help fight this appeal and help fight for your rights as well. Thank you so much for joining us, Lynn. I'm so sorry what's happened to your family. And let's hope that it doesn't happen to others.
InfoWars.com studios. It's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
Thank you for joining us on The Real News. I'm David Knight, and we have a couple of callers that we're going to go to here in a few moments. If you want to call in to talk about Trump's reversal on foreign policy or some of the other issues that we've talked about today, we were just talking to Lynn Ulbricht about the draconian sentences that were given to her son because the government wanted to make clear that we were not going to have a free internet. They didn't like Bitcoin. And just as we see in the Bunkerville trial, they will do anything to prejudice the jury, to keep them uninformed, even about the facts, certainly not about their rights to judge the law and how it's being applied, but they won't even let them hear about corruption within that particular case. And in her particular case, we had convicted federal agents who got into the website and stole money, and they are now going to jail, but not life sentences like her son, because they wanted to send a message to people that they were going to do anything that they found necessary, whether it was legal or not, to shut down the dark web. Just like they want to send a message to people that if you want to stand up to the government's new Agenda 21 policies, they will do anything to keep you in jail for the rest of your life. That's what we see happening in the Bunkerville trial as well. Let's take a look at some of the news real quick here at the top of the hour. We have Jay Johnson saying that removal of Confederate statues is now a matter of Homeland Security. Isn't that amazing? We were told that we had to have Homeland Security and the Patriot Act to protect us from the collapsing buildings on 9/11. And now they're going to the point of, after they've removed our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, they are now removing historical monuments. That's maybe not as much of a stretch as we might look at initially. We also see the reporter who exposed the BBC pedophilia cover-up has now suddenly died at the age of 52. They say it was a stroke. Liz McKean, who exposed the infamous pedophile Jimmy Savile, ultimately resigned back in 2013 over the BBC's decision to refuse to air her investigative report showing his crimes and showing how he was connected to people who were high up in politics, high up in the establishment, even the royal family, his connections to that. They shut that down, as there had been many shutdowns from above of investigations that had been initiated by Scotland Yard. So any investigation by law enforcement lower down, any investigation by reporters, that gets shut down by those who are in charge of the organization. And we're also looking at a story here, give up the home you own, says a Black Lives Matter activist. He makes up a list of requests that he would like from white people. This is a self-described co-founder, Chanel Helm. He says he's co-founder and core organizer of Black Lives Matter Louisville, and he's got a list of ways that you can give up your home and your property. He says, if you have any descendants, will your property to a black or brown family, preferably one that lives in generational poverty. White people who can afford to downsize are urged to give up the home that you own to a black or brown family because you don't deserve it because you are white or not black. Meanwhile, we have 200,000 people. That's up about 30% from yesterday. We had 150,000 people who had signed the White House petition to recognize Antifa as a terrorist organization. That is now up to 200,000. That's about a 30% increase in about 24 hours. It only requires a 100,000 signatures for a White House response to that. So we'll see what happens with that. Meanwhile, we have H.R. McMaster, the man who cannot bring himself to call even Al-Qaeda and Islamic terrorists. He can't bring himself to use that phrase. And if you use it in the Trump administration that he and the generals now run, you will be driven out. So I'm not really too sure that we're going to be able to get Antifa declared as a terrorist organization when we have McMaster will not talk about Islamic terror. He will not use that word. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that in detail. We're also going to go to our callers. If you want to call in, that number is 888-201-2244. Yes, as Breitbart put it, Trump is now listening to his McMaster's voice. And we have the same foreign policy we did before in Afghanistan. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You found it. It's The Real News. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Well, Welcome back to Real News. I'm David Knight, and we've got a couple of callers on the line that we want to get to. We're going to have Lee Stranahan joining us at the bottom of the hour, and I want to get his comments as to what do you think is happening with the reversal of Trump's longstanding policy, putting America first. Now it looks like Afghanistan is going to be first. That happened right after Bannon was taken out of the White House. And, of course, Lee Stranahan worked at Breitbart for quite some time. He also worked at Huffington Post. He's been all over the place. He's had a lot of experience as a journalist, but he knows Steve Bannon well. I want to get his comments on that, what he thinks is ahead with Steve Bannon, but especially his comments on Afghanistan. But I want to go to our phone callers right now. We have Lazaro in Alaska. He was holding, or she was holding, before we went to the interview with Lynn Albrecht. I appreciate you holding. Thank you so much for joining us, Lazaro.
Thank you, David. How you doing?
Doing good. Go ahead.
Terrific. I'm one of the researchers with respect to the Bunkerville, Nevada, and in Oregon, the standoff with respect to all the ties and the money. I mean, I'm talking about hedge funds, earmarks, stewardship, water conservation funds, public law bills and legislative bills on how they passed it and who passed it, and the agenda between Uranium One, Calico Resource, and Barrick Gold, Inc., also Nevada Mining, and then the Chinese giant ENN. It's well-documented. If your audience wants to go, it's called Lazaro Escenaro, E-C-E-N-A-R-R-O. But what I want to talk about...
Give that to us again, Lazaro, and Lazaro? What's the information?
Mm-hmm. Lazaro, L-A-Z-A-R-O, last name uh-huh. Escenaro, E-C-E-N-A-R-R-O. Matter of fact, it's crazy because one of the reasons why I'm here is I flew into Austin, Texas to get a hold of you guys. But you guys are the most difficult individuals to find. But nonetheless.
send me an email at davidk@infowars.com and tell me how to get in touch with you. But yeah, that's the point, isn't it? It's about Agenda 21. It's about the resources that the politicians would like to have so they can hand out to foreign countries. And of course, we've seen this happen with John McCain in Arizona. They took over a large park area there. They keep telling us, oh, we're preserving the property and we want to retain this precious area. And yet that was an area that was set up as a park. It had significant historical and cultural connections for the Apaches, Tonto National Park there. But they're going to strip mine that for copper. And you're going to see a hole there that is going to be so large, so deep, it'll be visible from space. So much for preserving the land that only the federal government can do. No, it's about getting to these minerals and handing it out to their crony capitalist friends, isn't it?
Correct, David. A matter of fact, I'll be going back to Arizona. I know which two mines that you're talking about. I will be documenting it from there, and it's on BLM land. You're absolutely correct, and John McCain is behind it.
Let's say that the BLM does not have land. They assert ownership of it, but they were supposed to be managers. But that's precisely what is the issue. They want to own this land, and they want to drive people off. And in Bunkerville, the Bundy family was the last of 50-plus ranchers that were in that area, and they will use any kind of diversion to get people off so they can get these resources for themselves and hand them out to their corporate friends.
Everybody, if they have the ability, look at a corporation called IDM Mining. IDM Mining, and it's called AKA Red Mountain. Red Mountain Mining, that company started from, is in Vancouver, Canada, no different than Uranium One, and Barrick Gold Inc. coming from Australia. So the name of that company that's going to be mining there is IDM Mining, and also known as AKA Red Mountain. We have it well-documented. Me and several other researchers have this well-documented. But we have to understand Harry Reid, and this is where it all starts between Harry Reid, George Soros, and then under the administration of Barack Hussein Obama. All these mining corporations are going from Arizona all the way to Washington State, meaning Oregon and Nevada and California. This is well documented, but well researched by, and actually is all done through the Pacific Crest View that was passed in 2017 and 2016. We have those documents. We have the senators and congressmen that signed these documents to go ahead, and they're going to go ahead and go away from New Mexico all the way to Canada on the Pacific Crest, and everything there within a 50 to 100-mile radius. It doesn't matter if you own the land, if it's a property, private property, or a public property. They're going to take everything that's on that 50-mile radius, ranchers included, or be gone. And this should be coming down or being implemented depending on what Trump, the direction Donald Trump wants to go with it.
You know, when we were in Washington State on a vacation, we took a vacation before this show started, and we were driving through the edge of one of the national parks, and it was an area that had a few very, very small farms. I would say maybe, you know, 20 to 50 acres, not large farms at all, but mostly it was residential suburban areas. And we started seeing all of these signs about taking this property, about a land grab. And that's where this is ultimately headed. I told people before that if you don't understand that the miners, the loggers, the ranchers have things like logging, mineral, grazing, water rights that are property rights. They don't own the land outright, but they have property rights to use that land. And that is something that is every bit as important and the same in nature as the idea that you have a property right for your house, for the land that you put your house on. And so if their property rights can just be swept away by the government because of self-interest, then it's going to come to a suburban area near you. And I saw that and put out a Periscope about that. You can find that on my Twitter account, Libertarian. That's what we also use for Real News. Talked about what was happening in that area. I said, see, this is where it is happening. I didn't show a lot of the houses, but that is precisely what is happening. They're going to come in and they're going to take people away in this suburban area. And what you're talking about is a massive land grab that is even bigger than what Barack Obama did by creating all of these special parks and saying that he's misusing an ancient monument statue. Isn't it kind of ironic that Obama was doing massive land grabs throughout the country, saying that it was part of a monument piece of legislation that went back to the early 20th century. Total abuse of that. And now here we have the federal government and Jay Johnson saying, now we got to take down actual monuments, just statues. But they use anything that they can to steal from us to set up this Agenda 21. Final comments, because I've got some other people on the line. Lazaro, go ahead.
This is Karen Suckling, the Center of Biological Diversity, under the Endangered Species Act. This is how they're implementing. But the most fundamental thing that we need to ask ourselves, all these lawyers and judges that are being appointed are mostly from George Soros, UCLA. Look up to the UCLA and look at all the judges and lawyers, mostly all appointed by Clinton and Barack Hussein Obama. Once you understand that as American people, we will understand that we have no justice or due process in those courts, especially when it pertains to the BLM, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and U.S. Forestry, the EPA, and the Agricultural Department. So you have zero due process because all the lawyers and judges are in bed through their hedge funds. And matter of fact, under 5 U.S. Code, every time the federal government wins against you, they get under 5 U.S. Code, they profit. They profit, meaning if the jury of your peers rules against you, they will profit under 5 U.S. Code, including the DA. So I advise everybody to look into that, into the 5 U.S. Code, on how judges and lawyers profit when they prosecute you and they have you incarcerated. That's a huge conflict of interest, and that's extortion and racketeering.
And that's beyond their career. That is absolutely amazing. Well, send that information to me at davidk at infowars.com. Thank you so much, Lazaro. Let's go to Jeff in Arizona. Jeff.
Hi, David. How are you?
Doing good. How are you?
Well, a little cynical now.
Yeah.
I understand the cynicism that people had during the previous administrations. You know, it made sense. Rich people in positions of high governmental power don't care about us. And, you know, when Trump started the campaign, I believe that things were going to be different. But, you know, I watched that speech over a couple different times last night on YouTube, and it didn't sound right to me. And then when I turned on the news show this morning, I heard what you had to say, and...
Hang on, we got to go to break, Jeff. I'm going to get right back to you when we come back from break. No commercials or anything. We'll go straight back to your comments. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back to Real News. I'm David Knight, and we've got a caller that we ran out of time in the last segment. He was saying, well, I asked him how he's feeling. He says, well, I guess I'm feeling a little bit cynical because of what we see happening with the dramatic reversal from America first to Afghanistan first, or I should say maybe the military-industrial complex interests first. Let's put their interests first. Let's put their war that's been going on for 16 years. And as we pointed out with Lynn Ulbricht in the last hour, we interviewed her. Her son has been railroaded through the so-called justice system because they wanted to shut down the dark web. They wanted to take action against people who were using Bitcoin. So they pulled out all the stops. They sentenced him to multiple life prison sentences plus 40 years, even though they had access to the system themselves, and federal agents were convicted of stealing money through the system. They couldn't be told to the jurors. So we have a very corrupt system. They're going to take care of themselves, and that's what we see happening with the military-industrial complex. But I want to go back to our caller, Jeff in Arizona, who was talking about this. We're going to let me just read you a couple of the comments, the tweets that people are starting to retweet from Donald Trump, because he's had a lot to say on Twitter over the years about Afghanistan, about Iraq. Going back to 2011, Donald Trump tweeted out, "Ron Paul is right when he says we're wasting lives and money in Iraq and Afghanistan." Yes, he was right 6 years ago, and Ron Paul is still right today. He was live tweeting, said, "I cannot believe that the neocons are so thoroughly in charge now, apparently, of the White House." And he was talking about the specific aspects of what Donald Trump was talking about in his speech last night. Donald Trump, however, is not right now, 6 years later. August 2012. Why, Donald Trump, why are we continuing to train these Afghanis who then shoot our soldiers in the back? Afghanistan is a complete waste. Time to come home. That was Donald Trump 5 years ago. Donald Trump 4 years ago, March the 1st, 2013. We should leave Afghanistan immediately. No more wasted lives. If we have to go back in, we go in hard and quick. Rebuild the U.S. first. Donald Trump, January 11, 2013. Let's get out of Afghanistan. Our troops are being killed by the Afghanis. We train and we waste billions there. Nonsense. Rebuild the U.S. Donald Trump, January 2013. I agree with President Obama on Afghanistan. We should have a speedy withdrawal. Why should we keep wasting our money? Rebuild the U.S. Donald Trump, November 2013. We have wasted an enormous amount of blood and treasure in Afghanistan. Their government has zero appreciation. Let's get out. Yes, but not now, because now he is listening to McMaster's voice telling him that we need to have the same policy that we had throughout the Obama administration. As we compared the quotes from Obama's speech in 2009, the beginning of his administration, to what we heard last night from Donald Trump, it's apparent that not only are the policies the same, even the catchphrases are the same. No blank check and so forth. There is no definition of what winning means. Let's go back to Jeff. Jeff, you were talking about your response to what Donald Trump said yesterday. Go ahead.
Yes. I remember one line he said in that speech last night. Said, "Let's not make a hasty retreat." And he was also referring to how ISIS was formed in a vacuum and such and things like that. Well, it just seems to me that you guys at InfoWars are a lot more informed than Trump. And believe me, I'm not an expert at understanding or processing the news or articulating my thoughts very well. So this may sound a little amateurish, but why can't there be people who are as learned as you and Alex who are advising Trump? It's the thing you guys need to know so much, and while Trump is left in the dark here. And I know people who hate Trump are going to take everything he says and anything he says out of context and use it against him anyway. But, you know, without asking specific questions about your sources or anything like that, because I can only imagine how hard your job must be or how much pressure Trump must be under. But he needs people like you advising him. He needs strong military generals around him. And we all know this, but why?
Well, as I've said before, one of my concerns about the Trump administration from the very beginning was to say he's surrounding himself with people who are not on board with his agenda. It's not even clear to me that these are people who voted for him. And as Tucker Carlson said last week, as Steve Bannon left, he said he's one of the few people that were in the Trump administration that wouldn't be just as comfortable in a Hillary Clinton administration. And so when you look at what's happening there, as I point out, the real victories that we've had in terms of the Trump agenda have been largely focused around what's going on with the environmental issues and the climate change issues. And I think that is largely due to the effect of having somebody that agrees with him on the agenda that he ran on, and that is Scott Pruitt at EPA. But when you look at these other people that he's put in the cabinet, these are New York Democrats. They're bankers. They're military-industrial complex neocons. They do not support his agenda. They are not America First people. They're me first people. They're people there that are trying to get their money and their power. And it's the same people that have been running Washington, whether we've had a Republican or a Democrat. We'd hope that we'd get something different. And I don't know why Donald Trump picked these people to come in. Maybe he was trying to make peace with them. Maybe he was trying with the establishment. Maybe he thought that he could bring in somebody who has expertise in a narrow field, and that they would work with him because it's a mutual thing. And of course, he's been a businessman. Maybe he thinks that people think the same way in politics as they do in business. They don't. In business, as an entrepreneur, he can tell people what to do and they'll do it because he pays them to do that. And it's a win-win situation. But in politics, they've got their own agenda. And it's like a religion to these people. They're not going to work with Donald Trump, and they don't care what happens to America. They don't care what happens to the American people. So the voice that he needs to hear is not so much my voice or Alex's voice, but it's your voice. That's why we're telling you this. It's the magnified voice of the American people. Again, going back to the analogy I had, to me it seems like you got a canoe where you got all the generals rowing on one side to turn this thing around. And even if Trump is steering, trying to go in the direction that he wants to go with a paddle on the back, if you've only got people paddling on one side, like these people that he's got in the administration, and again, I wish he would just fire them and get people who are on board with his agenda. I don't know why that doesn't happen. But they have pushed out the few people that he put in there that supported his agenda. If the American people don't start paddling on their side of the canoe, then the Washington establishment and the media and the generals in the White House are going to turn this thing around. And we've seen a major turnaround already now on Afghanistan. Jeff?
Yeah, that just sends up a lot of red flags, and I don't know, like it's like Uncle Sam was saying earlier. I can't go back to that way, and I certainly I don't think I can afford to going back to being, well, you know, it's all a bunch of rich people who own everything. It doesn't matter. Kind of like, you remember those old bits that George Carlin said was about, like, you know, power does what it wants to. We don't have
it's a club, and you're not in it.
Yeah. To stand up and lead the way and things like that, and I can't go back to being that way. So I don't know, like, what, like, seriously, this is a real thing. I'm wondering, what can I do? I mean, like, I'm in Arizona, and I don't.
Well, we got to go to a break, and we got Lee Stranahan coming up, and he might have some ideas. But I'll tell you what I think. I think that we have to understand a couple of things. We have to understand, first of all, that everything is not going to be fixed in Washington. Washington is the problem. It's not the solution, to paraphrase Reagan. And one person in Washington can't fix it. We have to take the power back, and we have to fix our problems locally. That may mean cutting off Washington. But we can support Trump to support his agenda. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Lee Stranahan.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Powers, keep on lying.
Live from Austin, Texas, it's
while
David Knight.
Keep on dying.
Welcome back to Real News. I'm David Knight, and we have joining us, I think, only for one segment because he's got some other commitments, is Lee Stranahan. You've heard Lee on our program many times. He's been a reporter for both Breitbart and the Huffington Post. So he's been on both sides of this. He's got a lot of experience. He has citizenjournalismschool.com. And you can also find his articles at thepopulist.us. So he's worked for Steve Bannon at Breitbart. He knows Bannon well. I want to get his comments on Bannon's leaving. But I also want to... Lee's not on with us yet? That's what you said? Okay, so he's not with us yet. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on with the policy and that we had unveiled last night. We've been talking about that, getting your comments on that. I want to play the clip that we've got from McMaster. Because, as Breitbart pointed out today, it is Trump listening to McMaster's voice, his master's voice, clearly. And I want you to understand where this guy is coming from. We've got White House petition that has over 200,000 signatures. It was just 150. It was 150,000 just yesterday. That's a 30% increase in the last day, calling on Trump to recognize Antifa as a terrorist organization. But we have McMaster, who is head of the National Security Council, who will purge anybody out of the White House that talks about radical Islamic terror. He does not want to use that phrase. And so I want to play for you a clip we have of McMaster talking about how terrorist groups are really not Islamic. They're really not religious. They're irreligious. They're un-Islamic. And here's that clip from McMaster.
Politics, something we should remember when we're thinking about the future. And then we also ought to remember that war is profoundly human. What do all these conflicts have in common? Of course, there are a lot of differences, right? And we have to be sensitive to local differences and realities that drive conflict. But what you see is you see these really irreligious organizations.
They're irreligious.
These criminal organizations who cloak themselves in this kind of false legitimacy of Islam. But they're really un-Islamic. They want to portray themselves as patrons and protectors
okay.
of aggrieved parties.
All right, let's leave it at that. That's Imam McMaster's explaining to us what Islam really means about this and why these people who are killing people in the name of Muhammad and shouting Allahu Akbar everywhere, they don't really mean that. They don't really have true Islam. Evidently, McMaster knows what true Islam is, and he has a foreign policy that he just sold Donald Trump that is a complete reversal of what Donald Trump ran on and what he's been tweeting about for over 6 years. Get out of Afghanistan, put America first, rebuild America, not Afghanistan. And joining us now is Lee Stranahan. Thanks for joining us, Lee.
David, thanks so much for having me, and congratulations on the show.
Thank you. It didn't take very long for the policy to change. They did it on the same day that they got Bannon out of the White House. They dragged Donald Trump down to Camp David, and then they said, well, he came in with a very different idea, but we're going to give him the weekend to explain how he's going to explain this to the American people, figure out how he's going to do it. We heard that speech last night. What'd you think?
Well, we were doing a live on my radio show. We were doing a live listen, and we did reaction immediately after. I don't know what he said. In other words, it was a purposely vague speech. The whole idea in the speech was to, I don't know how else to say it, mouth platitudes, say stuff about the troops. We all like the troops,
yeah.
Right? And mm-hmm. and then start it with some stuff about Charlottesville, basically, that Ivanka must have written for him. And then in the middle, say nothing. Now, the dangerous part about the speech, David, was what he said about Pakistan. That's where he threw everybody for a loop. That was the plot twist. But the other thing I want to point out, and this is a really big deal, the other thing I want to point out is that there was something at the White House issued earlier in the day, and it was commemorating the anniversary of the Gota attack. Now, I don't know if you know anything about that. But that's the – remember, I know you know about it, but you may have forgotten it. A lot of people may have. This mm-hmm. was the attack that was used as a justification for war in the Obama administration, where we said that Bashar al-Assad had gassed his own people.
Okay? Oh, yeah. That was the one back in 2013, yeah.
So the fact that the White House issued something on that yesterday in the run-up to this speech is significant. Here's what I think is going on. McMaster, you quoted that, you played that clip of McMaster earlier. McMaster has also said in no uncertain terms, the new strategy in Syria is regime change. This is a direct continuation of the Obama era policies. And mm-hmm. those two little surprises, what he said about Pakistan and what he also said, what they issued but didn't say last night, about the Gota attack have me very concerned here.
And, of course, let's remember this year that it was as Steve Bannon was removed from the National Security Council, immediately they retaliated to the copycat situation that we had seen back in 2013, wasn't it, where we had that sarin gas attack. And then eventually, as they waited before they jumped into that, They found that both the UN, Russian investigators, and then the Pentagon said, well, no, actually, it wasn't Assad's forces that did that. So we were able to avert that. We were able to delay that. But with McMaster there, they immediately sent the missiles in as a signal. So the fact that they're tying these things together, and going back to McMaster, the book that he is famous for in the Pentagon, the one that is recommended reading for those who are in the Marines, Dereliction of Duty. It's an after-action report of Vietnam. And he goes back, and the central thesis of that was that there was a dereliction of duty on the part of the military officers because they did not override the civilian leadership and tell them what the right policy in Vietnam was. And so he's not going to make that mistake again. And so when you have the headline from Breitbart saying Trump is listening to McMaster's voice, his master's voice, essentially, that's, I think, what is, it's not an overstatement to say that he is going to, in no uncertain terms, dictate this foreign policy. And he's talking about how it's a bunch of platitudes. Earlier in the show, we talked about a tweet where people compared the exact phrases that Obama had used at the beginning of his administration in 2009, 8 years ago, and showed how they were being repeated. We got the same speechwriters, we got the same policy people now that are running Trump. It's a, you know, just a different bank, maybe. I don't know. A different president, same bank, I guess.
Well, here's the thing, too. I'm glad, you know, I was the former lead investigative reporter for Breitbart. I'm very glad Steve Bannon is back at Breitbart. I was saying this in the last week. I think the best position for him might be outside, and they're starting to get it back. But I gotta say, I wish Breitbart, and I say this as a loyal opposition here, I wish they had done their job a few months ago when I was talking about people like Dina Powell and Gary Cohn and hitting hard on them and talking about the danger of Ivanka Trump being in there. You and I spoke about that, David, right here on InfoWars. Remember that months ago?
Yes.
At the same time, Breitbart's Matt Boyle was saying Ivanka rocks Berlin and praising her. Now, that is a level of denialism that is dangerous, and it helped lead to the situation that we're in now. So once again, I say this as somebody who's a Andrew Breitbart was my friend. I admire Steve Bannon. I'm glad he's back, but you got to call people out when they wimp out like that. And
I think they're going to do that now because, you know, he was very gleeful when he gave, well, I mean, if he comes back, I think that that he's going to be a little bit more confrontational. I think there was a sense that they wanted to have access. That kills journalism, 100%. Doesn't it? Yeah, it kills access. If your priority is access to powerful people, you're not going to say anything critical about them because they're going to cut that access off. So I think that now that he's out of the chain of command, he's feeling those chains off of him. I think that whether he goes back to Breitbart or whatever he does,
well,
I think
back.
He's going to be.
He's
yeah.
back.
Oh,
at
he
Breitbart.
Is back now. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. They announced it that night. So he is back. And that's why you're seeing this renewed energy from them immediately on this speech, which is good. Again, I'm a more voices, not less person. But I got to say, one thing about InfoWars is you guys aren't concerned about making friends. Does that make, you know what I'm saying?
That's right. Hey, Lee, you have to go this segment, right? This is all that you've got time for, or can you stay another segment? I think he's got to go this. Okay, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back to Real News. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Lee Stranahan. And of course, you can find Lee at citizenjournalismschool.com. It's an excellent class there. If you want to get involved, if you want to really make an effect, he's going to tell you how to sort through the false news to get to the real news, how to do real news reports yourself, and you can find that at citizenjournalismschool.com. Also, you can find what he writes about at thepopulist.us. But right now, he's with us on the line, and we've been talking about the change that we saw last night with Donald Trump going back and falling in line with the military-industrial complex, with the Obama policies, the Bush policies on Afghanistan, putting Afghanistan before America first. We now have an Afghanistan first policy. It was a dramatic U-turn. And the person who seems to be calling the shots now is H.R. McMaster. As I played the clip just before Lee joined us, McMaster saying, these people who are terrorists, they really don't understand Islam. They're really irreligious. It's not true Islam. So maybe we should call him Imam McMaster, because he seems to be the one who is a true follower of Muhammad. And let me give you an example. There's this book that I talked about earlier as well that he's been promoting, that he endorsed in the book. And in this book, it calls on the U.S. military to respond to any desecrations of the Quran by service members with an apology ceremony, and advocates kissing a new copy of the Quran before presenting the Islamic text to the local Muslim public. There we go. This is the kind of policy that we're seeing from them, even as they come into the country and tear it apart and not rebuild our own country. But I want to talk to Lee. We were just talking about the possibility of what's going to happen. Is Breitbart going to change, Lee, as we see Bannon coming back? Or do you think they're going to try to still take a tact politically that is going to preserve access? Or do you think they're going to go on full attack against the people like McMaster that really kind of engineered, I think, and pushed out Bannon out of the White House?
Well, they're definitely going to go on full attack against McMaster, and we've already seen that, okay? Mm-hmm. That's not the question to me. The issue is going to be, are they going to address the broader threats, the story, the Ukraine DNC story? Let me give an example of that. You and I have talked about the Ukrainian interference in the election in 2016. We've talked about that. Literally no reporting on that ever at Breitbart. Literally no reporting. Now, the question is...
And you also got taken down really with your CrowdStrike reporting as well, in terms of they didn't really want to cover that aspect of it either. The fact that we have a private DNC contractor who is controlling access to the servers and feeding out this narrative that it was a Russian hack, and we're just taking their word for it. We're not allowed to see the servers. And you have been right on point taking the lead on the CrowdStrike investigation, and Breitbart didn't want to go into that as well, right?
Because it's not remotely controversial. James Comey testified in front of Congress three times under oath that the DNC refused to cooperate with the investigation. He said it twice in front of the Senate and once in front of the House, that the FBI asked the DNC. I want to be clear on this, David. They asked the DNC for the server various times at multiple levels, and they were rebuffed every time. Now, imagine if the FBI had asked Donald Trump for something, anything,
yeah,
and he hadn't done it. They would have hammered on it. So to me, none of these stories are controversial. The DNC Ukraine story, it's admitted by the people involved. All somebody has to do is pick up on it, but they don't want to pick up on it. And you nailed it. Let me also tie this. The other thing that was stunning about the speech last night, and I want to just tie in what you said about McMaster and Islam with the horrible strategic mistake of giving into this Charlottesville false narrative.
Yes.
These are people who don't understand the danger of ideology. This is not the alt-left. This is the left. I want to be really clear on this. The same way it's a danger to say that, well, you know, Al-Qaeda, they're not really Islam. Well, of course, or ISIS, right? It is a danger to say that the peace and justice movement, Black Bloc, Antifa groups, whatever name they use this week, Black Lives Matter, Occupy Wall Street, because literally it's the same people, David, literally.
Maybe we could call them the alias left, because they reinvent their name every week or so that you don't realize who they are.
And by the way, they've gotten smarter with the names. Black Lives Matter. Gee, David, do you not think Black Lives Matter? You see how by building that into the name, they make opposing them. Oh, gee, what are you, pro-fascist? This is an anti-fascist group. These are people, the left understands linguistics, language, and marketing. They understand it very well.
And they will take over the language and the marketing and the labels from other people if they've got a good one, like the term liberal. That used to be a good term the 19th century, and they co-opted that and changed it to something completely different.
Peace and justice. Are you in favor of peace and justice? That's what they call themselves, the peace and justice movement. But these are people who for 60 years now have defended every cop killer they can find. This goes back to the Black Panthers 50 plus years ago, 1966. The left defends cop killers, from the Black Panthers to Assata Shakur to the new group. And they've changed what it means for free speech. If Martin Luther King's giving a speech and 10,000 people come to shut him down,
yes,
are they exercising their free speech or are they shutting down his, right? That would be clear. What they've done is they've made free speech shut. I'm fine, and you'd be fine. If there's one rally of libertarians or one rally of conservatives or one rally of Nazis, I don't even care. And they want to come up and spread. I'm not a white supremacist. I don't agree with ethnic nationalism. But you know what? I don't feel the way to argue against it is to shut it down. I feel the way to argue against it is to argue against it.
Exactly. And that was the thing that really disturbed me. And you nailed it there, Lee, when you said that we had the White House, we had Trump saying, isn't this great? We have a peaceful demonstration. It wasn't a peaceful demonstration. No. It was an intimidation.
That's
and
right.
They had 40,000 people there, and the name of their counter-protest was Fight the Right. And the people who were there, the few people who were there, I don't think were Nazis. They purged those people out, but they were afraid to show up to this crowd that had 40,000 people, and they had to be taken out in a police van for their own protection. There were 33 people that were arrested out of the peaceful demonstrators because they were fighting the police. They were fighting others. They were throwing urine bottles at the police and beating people. So it was not a peaceful demonstration on their part. It was a mass intimidation against the First Amendment. And as you pointed out, we should be supporting people even if we disagree with their speech. The ACLU has in the past supported this kind of speech, and now they're saying we're not going to support speech if it's a hate group. So that's a big change even for them.
It's a huge change, and it's very dangerous. And here's the thing. I hate commies, okay? I don't like communists like Angela Davis, who was speaking at the Women's March, whose shotgun that she owned was taped to the neck of a judge that blew his head off in the Marin County courthouse takeover, 40 years ago. I don't like Angela Davis. I don't want to shut her down. But this is what's happening.
Or even Bill Ayers. Even Bill Ayers, as bad as the guy, we'll let him speak. We can defeat him. I think you're spot on. I think that's a very dangerous trend that we've got here. And we're running out of time. I've got to do a plug before we go. But let me just tell people how to get to your site again. It is citizenjournalismschool.com, where they can sign up, and thepopulist.us. And, of course, they can find you on Twitter at Stranahan. You're always filing great reports there with Periscope. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lee.
Thanks so much, David. God bless.
Really appreciate that. Thank you. And we're about at the end of our broadcast here on Real News, and I want to tell you about the BuzzFeed specials. We have items that are selling out. We got Brain Force selling out, even though it is still available at 55% off retail. $17.76 is the price. We put the price of a lot of different items down to $17.76. That has given us massive discounts. And I don't have the time to go through all the different products that we have there, but let me just give you a sample of some of them. We got Knockout at $14.95. That's 50% off. We have Survival Shield X2, Nascent Iodine. That's $17.76. That's 55% off retail. Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formulation, so that you can get a supplement without taking an injection. That is $17.76. That's 55% off retail. Oil of oregano, 40% off retail. BioTrue Selenium, that is a natural organic. It's not a synthetic selenium. You can look it up. You need to have selenium in your diet as a supplement, and this is the best form you can find of it. That's 29% off retail. We also have the new Super Blue fluoride-free mouthwash that is 11% off at $17.76. And here's the biggest one. InfoWars selects storable food, 30 to 40% off, but you can get an additional 10% off, taking it down to 50% off InfoWars selects storable food if you use the coupon code GOBLIN. And there is free shipping store-wide. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for supporting us. It's the products that you buy that make this possible. Stay tuned. Alex Jones is coming up.